So next we have a short Dhamma talk. The topic is the mind stilled. It's about the Pali term Bhabancha or Nipabancha. The people behind there, I don't know, you can't see the screen, so if you like, you can move forward here. Otherwise, it's just the audio for you. So if you like to see the screen, you could move a little bit forward into the middle. It's up to you. So. So as mentioned before, I will be giving three Dhamma talks. Today is about the mind still. The next Friday will be the magic of the mind. And on the 29th, gaining freedom. So each one will be with half an hour meditation and then a short Dhamma talk with question and answers. So if we come to the Dhamma, if we say usually Dharma or Dhamma, we mean the teachings of the Buddha. But the Dharma means much more than that. So usually if we talk about Dharma, it means any good conduct, any path leading to enlightenment, any good practice or spiritual practice leading to awakening. Also we should make a distinction between Buddhism and Dhammism. So usually nowadays Buddhism is usually mixed with culture. So we get Sri Lankan Buddhism, we get Zen Buddhism or Thai Buddhism. So each of these traditions is the original Buddhist teaching mixed with some culture of that country. Dhamma, what I mean with Dhamma is the original teaching, the practical part of the Buddhist teaching, mainly meditation, understanding of the law of karma, how the karma is working, and precepts, keeping a moral, spiritual life. Therefore, strictly speaking, the original teaching of the Buddha was not even meant as a religion. Many also regard it as a philosophy or a way of life. So only later, under King Ashoka, it has been made into a religion. Therefore, I agree with this little girl when she says, birthplace earth, race human, politics freedom, and religion love and compassion. So usually the Buddhist teaching or the idea of the Buddha was not to establish a new religion. It was to show a way out of suffering, explain a way how to handle the mind, how to develop the mind, and how to reach stages of awakening. One of the main terms the Buddha used over and over again was ehipassiko. It means literally come and see. So he says my teaching has the quality of come and see, so you can take any part of this Buddhist teaching and you can put it into practice. So you can find out for yourself if this is helpful for you. Any part can be tested practically. If it is not leading to any good in your life, you can throw it out, you can disregard it. Only if you can see from your own experience, this is good for me, this is helpful, my negative emotions are going down, my good qualities are coming up, then take it as something good, as something useful. The Buddhist movement spread very far in those days in India, and also it lasted such a long time that even now we have the Buddhist teaching available. The reason is because of the purity of the teaching. So it was mainly a practical part, a technique, how to develop your mind, how to reach stages of awakening. And also nowadays, Buddhism is known for its tolerance, for its compassion also with other traditions, with other religions. And in the name of Buddhism, never any wars have been conducted. So even for non-Buddhists, the Buddha or the Buddhist movement has a very they regard it in a higher way. The Buddha is very famous in all the Western countries, even if they don't exactly know what the Buddha was teaching, but they have some this tolerant idea appeals to their mind. The main teaching of the Buddha, or the main practical part, of course, was the meditation. So we can study the Buddhist teaching, we can learn, we can discuss about it, but without ever sitting down and meditating, we will not be able to realize or understand the teachings completely. And coming back to the topic again, this is my teacher, the Venerable Kodunda Nyanananda in Sri Lanka. He wrote several books about the deeper teachings of Buddhism. This book, Concept and Reality, was his very first book, and it deals with this term Papancha. So the whole book is about this sermon of the Buddha, where he talks about this term Papancha or Nippapancha, which we will shortly explain now. So Papancha means proliferation. People delight usually in Papancha, means in daydreaming and thinking, making up stories and watching the spreading mind. Tathagata, this is another name for the Buddha, delights in Nippapancha. So he has learned in meditation to calm his mind and not to watch this spreading mind. So proliferation means you sit down in meditation and you pick up one story, and you keep on thinking about the same thing over and over again. This Papancha has three meanings implied. One is to spread or proliferate. The other is it has something of an illusion and also of an obstacle. And where these three all come together is very easy to find out. It's as soon as you sit down in meditation, you will have to face this scattered mind. So all these three, the spreading mind, the illusion will be there, and also the obstacle of your meditation. So as soon as you sit down in meditation, you try to keep your main object, the breath or whatever you're using, you will see that the mind is used to run around. It jumps from object to object. It does not want to settle down at one object. So the main enemy of meditation is Papancha, this running mind or spreading mind. In Vipassana meditation or in insight meditation, we usually use one main object like the breath. Whenever the mind wanders away to another object, you can be either aware of this movement of the mind or you put a label. So as soon as you start thinking about something, you put the label thought, and then you bring the attention back to the breath. Same with pictures in your mind, you just say there is an image and you bring the mind back again. What we should do is to stop the spreading mind with an equanimous thought. So we should not start to analyze things. Let's say I feel a pain in my leg. I should not analyze it as pain or unpleasant, or I don't like it, or why is it there. I should try to note it with an equanimous thought. So I just say there is a sensation in my body, and I bring the attention back to my breath and move on with my meditation. In the famous Kalama Sutra, many of you will know, the Buddha said, do not believe in anything. He says, even if a famous teacher says so, or some tradition is following something, even what the Buddha says, we should not believe blindly. We should examine it, we should practice it, we should reason about it, and only if we can see the practical use of this particular part of the teaching, then we should take it as something useful, as something important for me. So the Buddha nature is within all of us. So each one of you has this Buddha nature within you. The Buddha never claimed to be a god or a prophet or anything, born as anything special. He was born as a human being like me and you. Maybe he had special paramis, that means he was had some experience from his past lives, but he was born as a normal human being. Then, through his own effort, through his own meditation, he realized his Buddha nature within him. So he awoke, he became enlightened, and since that moment we call him the Buddha. So his personal name was Siddhartha, and the Buddha literally means the enlightened one. The Buddha also called our reality an illusion. His name was, his word was Maya or Mahamaya, which means the great illusion. So he said our reality is not real, it's like a dream-like state. Only if you meditate and reach stages of awakening, you can see things as they are, or you can see reality for yourself. So we have to look behind the curtain of this illusion and see how things actually are. So is it now that we live in a dream or in a, some call it a hologram or a projection? If somebody would be in a dream for a long, long time, and the dream would be so real that we never question the dream, there would be only one way to find out about it, the moment you wake up. So the moment you wake up from this dream, you could look back and you could see it was just a dream. So as long as you're inside this dream or this illusion, you will take it as reality, you will take it as real as long as it lasts. So the only important thing in this Buddhist teaching is the experience. According to the Buddha, we should not trust anything or anybody else, only what your five senses, the experience you get from your five senses, the experience you yourself get in your meditation. Then coming back to this Papanchadharma again, here the Buddha said there are seven sorts of a great man. He says this Dhamma or this teaching is for somebody who wants little and not for somebody who wants much. It is for someone who is contented and not discontented. It is for the secluded and not for one who is fond of society. It is for somebody who is energetic and not lazy. It is for one who has set up mindfulness and not for the unmindful one. It is for the composed and not for the flustered. It is for the wise and not for the unwise. And these 7 points were suggested by Venerable Anuruddha, one of the monks under the Buddha. The Buddha agreed with all these 7 terms, but he said you should have included one more. The eighth sort of a great man is this one. It says this Dhamma is for one who delights in Nippabancha and not Papancha. So there we get our term Papancha again. So this Dhamma, if you practice in this teaching, you will not come very far if you delight in Papancha, so in daydreaming, in watching your thoughts, in letting your mind run on its own. So in meditation, we train the mind to watch one thought, we train the mind to watch, to be aware, to be mindful of whatever is going on in our body and mind, and we develop control of our running mind. So usually if something is coming into our five senses, here's the example of the eyes. So the eyes and the shape meet. They do lead to sensory impingement. The sensory impingement leads to feelings. Feelings lead to perception. Perception, we start thinking about it or reason about it, and that leads necessarily again to Papancha. So we cannot stop if the eye meets a form, so there's a connection, we see something. But in our meditation we can stop this process in the middle at the feeling level, so we do not analyze it as I like it or I don't like it. I just noted with an equanimous neutral thought. So whenever I, even with closed eyes, you may see pictures, shapes or lights. So whenever that happens, you just note it as there is a image in my mind and I move on with my meditation. So one neither delights in nor clings to any of the five senses, at least in this Vipassana meditation. When you sit in meditation, you can ride it completely. So you note all these five senses, you stop the spreading mind with an equanimous thought, and you move back to your main meditation object. The process is called sati, or mindfulness. Some translate sati as mindfulness or awareness. Others say the better translation is presence. You are fully present in this very moment. The Buddha called it ekamakko, which means the only way. According to the Buddha, without mindfulness, without awareness, it is impossible to develop the mind. Also, there are many different meditation systems. Each one is dealing with mindfulness. So if you cannot develop mindfulness, meditation will not be successful. At the Buddha's time, there was one monk coming to the Buddha. He was complaining about the rules. A monk has 250 something rules to keep. So he said, there are so many rules, I'm totally confused with all these rules. The whole day I can't stop thinking about them. I'm afraid I might break one or the other. So how should I meditate remembering all these rules? The Buddha said, forget about the rules, you don't need to remember any of it. Just remember one rule, and that is be mindful. Just try to be fully mindful, fully aware the whole day. Then automatically you will not break any important rules, and you will be able to do your meditation. So the most important practice in Buddhism is is mindfulness, or is meditation. The more mindful you are during the day, the better will be your sitting meditation. So if the whole day is stressed out or you are unmindful, even let's say in the evening you sit down for meditation, it will be very difficult to calm your mind. These are the then fetters. In order to make progress in your meditation and to reach stages of awakening, according to the Buddha, we have to break or get rid of all these fetters which bind us to this material existence. Important are the first three. So in order to reach the first stage of awakening, we have to overcome the first three of these fetters. One is the belief in the self. So the belief that there is a I or a me or mine has to drop away. The other is, second one is doubt. So here means gross doubt, doubt in your meditation, doubt in the Buddha or in enlightenment itself. The third one is attachment to rules and rituals. And this one means if somebody thinks every day I have to light my lamp and do some chanting, and without that I'm not a Buddhist, without that I can't reach any stage of awakening. So we can do rituals, chantings, and rituals are good. It makes it more colorful, but as soon as we think this is the most important thing in this teaching, then that is Silapada Paramasanang, or attachment to rules and rituals. The number four and five is lust and hate. So any desire or anger or hate has to pass away gradually when you reach the second and the third stage of awakening. The last five drop away when you reach full arahatship, or full enlightenment. So we said in the beginning about karma, so a general understanding about karma is also necessary in order to make some progress. The Buddha gave this one stanza in order to avoid bad karma and also to make prepare the basis for meditation. So he says, abstain from all sinful actions, perform only pious ones, purify your mind. This is the teaching of all the Buddhas. As we can see, he said all the Buddhas, so according to the Buddha, there have been thousands of Buddhas before him, and there will be many, many more after him. But if you look around, we can see in many religions and traditions, it is blasphemous even to think that one can reach enlightenment by oneself. So usually in many traditions it is not even regarded possible that we ourselves have the ability to reach higher stages of awakening. Everybody likes to have health, prosperity, peace and happiness, but usually the approach is very different. So if we like to get all these positive things in our life, there are certain requirements. First of all, we have to understand how the law of karma is working. We have to understand what is a moral life, how to live a good spiritual life, and also how to attract all these positive things into our life. Also, when it comes to dharma and also the law of karma, our beliefs are irrelevant. I put this small guy up there on the rock. So let's say he does not believe in the law of gravity. He jumps down the rock. What will happen? He will either die or suffer, even if he does not believe in the law of gravity. Similarly, it is if somebody says, I'm from a different religion, I do not believe in the law of karma. Even if we do not believe in it, we are still subject to this law of karma. So our beliefs, if I believe in it or not, does not make any difference. I am still subject to this universal law of karma. Similar to the Dharma, everybody is subject to this universal law of Dharma. There is nowadays a philosophy out there which is called moral relativism, and many, many people have this idea. It means that they believe that there is no absolute good or bad out there. So it depends on the situation, it depends on how I'm feeling today, or it depends on my circumstances. There is no absolute good or bad. According to the Dharma, it is exactly the opposite. So good and bad is like written in stone, it cannot be changed, and it has no influence how I think about it or how my present situation is. So whatever is good will always remain good, whatever is bad will always remain bad. So karma is a universal law, it's not made by the Buddha, it was rediscovered by the Buddha. Also karma is known in other, like Hinduism or in other tradition, it is very well known. Also in some sayings of Jesus we can see that even Jesus was teaching about karma. He said, as you sow, so you reap. So karma is fairly well known now in Western society. The effect of karma does not happen immediately. So it is usually mixed together with other karmas and is coming back in different ways. Not immediately, there's usually a gap in between. Also, we cannot say when it comes back or in which way it comes back. All we can say for sure, whatever we put out there is coming back again. So we should be very careful which energies we are sending out there. Everything we send out is coming back in one way or another. And there are still some people out there who do not believe in past lives. I give always this example about Mozart, not only because he's from my country, but because it's a very good example. So Mozart was composing his first symphony with the age of 5. He was playing piano and other instruments. definitely he did not learn all that in that life, so that was some experience from the past. And there have been many examples of young children who speak five languages without ever having learned them. So all these special cases show us that there must be some experience from a past life. So we move throughout samsara from one life to the other. Sometimes some memory remains fresh, so we still remember things from a past life. Usually as soon as we are reborn, the memory is covered up and we start from the beginning again. Also, the only thing we can take from life to life, or there are two things. One is the good karma. The good karma is going with us from life to life. The second one is if you really make some progress in your meditation, that meditative experience also is going with you to your next life. Also, if you are reborn as a small child, you can't remember your experience. But as soon as you sit down again and meditate, that experience will come up. These are usually the cases when they start with meditation, or as soon as they start, immediately they make some progress in their meditation, because there has been some experience or some attainment in their past life. So important is, if we move throughout samsara, especially if you are interested in meditation, to live in the present moment, to live in the here and now, not to allow the mind to move into the past and into the future. So be fully present, fully aware, be here now. Don't try to escape into the illusion even deeper. Some use, like alcohol or drugs, just to escape this reality, but they are going in the opposite direction. So in meditation, we try to wake up from this dreamlike state through drugs and alcohol, even like watching movies for many, many hours, or games. All this is leading even deeper into the illusion. So the Buddha recommended a quiet surrounding for practicing mindfulness. So sit down at a quiet place, watch your mind, watch your breath, and develop awareness and mindfulness. So we have to liberate our consciousness from the self. So what we actually are is not a human being. We are pure consciousness having a human experience. As soon as you wake up in your meditation, what you realize is that you have been in a dreamlike state, into an illusion, and now you can see things as they are. Many people who have died, or like, what is it called, clinically dead people who came back again, they all reported as soon as they disconnected from their body, their consciousness was unlimited. They could be at different places at the same time. They could see anything, know everything. They were unlimited. So this unlimited consciousness is what we actually are. And through meditation, we can come back to that true state of our mind. Also, theoretical knowledge is not leading to awakening. All the book knowledge or theoretical knowledge may be useful in order to point in a certain direction. But again, without actually sitting down, without actually meditating, we will not be able to make any progress. Then shortly about the Buddhist, as you said, there are many different traditions, many different sects and groups in Buddhism, like mainly Mahayana, Theravada, Zen Buddhism, or Vajrayana. So many different traditions, they all dress a little differently. Usually what they do, they emphasize different suttas, different texts of the Buddha. But what we should try is to emphasize on the common things. And when I came today, they told me that this is a place where they do not make any big distinctions. So they respect all the different traditions and they focus on the deeper parts of the Buddhist teaching. So we should focus on the similarities. So all of these different sects, they respect the Buddha as the founder. They live a good life, that they try to practice the Dhamma, they meditate, and the aim is to reach stages of awakening. So all these things are similar, all this is same. The dress may be slightly different, the suttas they focus on may be slightly different, but the most important parts are all the same. So we should not fall into the gap of sectarism. We should see the common things among them. So again, not only within Buddhism, but also within all the other religions, with all the other traditions, we should try to see the common thing. Every religion has a little bit of Dharma in it, some religions more, some less. So again, we should see the good part in each tradition. So earth is my country, love is my state, and peace is my agenda. So vipassana, or meditation, insight meditation, is the main focus of the Buddha. What he recommended is the breath, because it's always there. Again, the breath is very good because it is non-sectarian. If you would sit down and recite, let's say, I say Buddha, Buddha, or any other name of a deity, it would be again sectarian. If I sit down and just watch my breath, everybody can watch the breath, everybody can watch his mind. So it is non-sectarian, everybody can do that. I have been to a few of these Goenka Vipassana retreats, and his approach is very untraditional, so not even a Buddha statue is there. And the good thing is that from all different religions and traditions, people are coming and practicing together. So I've seen like Muslims, even Christian priests came there, Hindus, Buddhists, Christians, all were sitting together and meditating. Without meditation, what usually happens, we lose the control of our mind. That is not the only problem. We ourselves are suffering from our mind. But it does not stop there. So if we do not learn to control our mind, we also distribute this tension to all the people around us. So it is a big burden for all the people around us and for society as a whole. So we should learn to, we should learn the art of living in a different way. So if you handle your mind, you get the control of your mind, you can calm the negative emotions in your mind, you yourself will live a happy, peaceful life, and also you will be a pleasant person for all the people around you. So as already mentioned, the breath is a very good point to start with. So if you use the breath as a main object, there are many reasons why the Buddha, his favorite was the breath. He recommended about 40 different meditation objects, but his favorite was the breath. So the main reason is because it is very close connected with the mind. Whenever the mind changes, also your breath is changing, and also because it is non-sectarian. So it is possible for any person from any background to use this tool for his meditation. The Buddha compared the mind to a restless monkey. He said the mind, the untrained mind, is like a small monkey jumping from tree to tree. So usually the mind likes to grasp things. It doesn't like to stay in one object. So that is what we face when we start with meditation. As soon as you sit down in meditation, you will see the mind tries to escape. The mind tries to grasp different things. It jumps from one object to the other. In Vipassana meditation, we do not get upset with this mind. We just gently, we try to be aware of what the mind is doing. We note it and we bring the attention back to our main object, the breath. It happens again, the mind wanders away to another object. Again, gently, I note it and I bring the attention back again. So in this Vipassana meditation, the purpose is not is not even to stay at one object all the time. Through this movement of the mind, I understand what the Buddha called the three characteristics of life. So we understand the anicca, dukkha, and anatta. Anicca means the impermanent nature of all the things. So we can see the mind is changing, is wandering off all the time. The anatta is the non-self nature. You can write it yourself. If you sit down and you say, let me not think anything for 5 minutes, you will not be able to do that. Or let's say you sit down and say, for 5 minutes, I want to think only positive thoughts. Again, not possible. So we cannot control the mind. Whatever comes up from our mind, it is auto, it is non-self. So thoughts are coming up, random thoughts, good and bad and different thoughts. But what we can do is we can be fully aware, fully mindful of these thoughts. We can either grasp it or just let it be. That is our choice. But we cannot change the thoughts coming up. And whatever is changing from moment to moment and what cannot be controlled is also dukkha or suffering. Some don't like suffering. Some translate dukkha as non-satisfactory. So the mind tries to run off into the past and into the future. In meditation, we have to try to keep it in the present moment. I think also the meditation system Ajahn Brahmer is recommending, the first stage is be in the present moment. And only the second stage is you move to the present, or what your main object is. So we have to try to keep it in the present moment, not to run off into the past and into the future. And then shift the attention to your main meditation object. If you don't do that, if you're not equanimous, not mindful in your meditation, the mind starts analyzing as pleasant or unpleasant. As soon as that happens, we create new karma, which is again stored in our subconsciousness, and at a later occasion, it's coming up again as a memory, leading to ignorance, craving, and aversion. So we start the whole cycle of creating karma again. And in your next meditation sitting, you have to face this memory again. So in order to liberate yourself from all bondage of craving, you have to use this tool of meditation. So the best would be if you meditate daily, at least a few minutes, once a week or so. If you come here, you can do a little longer. So everybody who meditates daily makes some progress towards awakening. This was the advice given to Bahir by Buddha. Bahir was one of the monks of the Buddha who wanted to meditate in seclusion in the forest. So he came up to the Buddha and asked him for a short advice. He said, please give me in short a meditation instruction. I want to go to the forest and meditate all alone. So please, in short, give me some instruction. That's what the Buddha said. So it was very short. He said, in the seen, just the seen. In the heard, just the heard. In the sensed, just the sensed. In the cognized, just the cognized. Train yourself this way. This is the end of suffering. And he said that Bahir, because he had some experience from past lives, as soon as he heard this short advice, he attained enlightenment. So he needed not even to go to the forest. He was already enlightened after hearing this. But for Vipassana meditation, this is the best advice. So whatever, when we sit in meditation, whatever you see, even with closed eyes, you can see pictures. It is just the scene. So you stop it with a neutral, equanimous thought. You just say there's an image and you move on. Whatever you hear in your meditation, it is just a sound. Or whatever you feel in your body, it is just a sensation. Or whatever you think, or whatever you start thinking about something, try to note it as just some thought. So you stop all these five senses, including the mind as the sixth, with the neutral equanimous mind, and you move on with your meditation. So papancha, this proliferation, is the root cause of all sickness within the individual and in society. So if you learn to keep your mind away from spreading, that is the end of all your troubles, the end of suffering. So nippapancha is equal to enlightenment. There's a famous book, it's called the Questions of King Milinda. It's one of the Buddhist books. In that book, there's a dialogue between King Milinda and a famous monk called Nagasena. And the king asked Nagasena this. He said, "Sir Nagasena, this has been said by the Buddha. One should dwell delighting in and being delighted by nippapancha. So what is nippapancha?" And this famous monk, Nagasena, gave this answer. He said, "Nippapancha is equal to reaching the first stage of enlightenment. It is equal to reach the second stage, the third stage, and even the fourth stage of enlightenment." So he said, complete nippapancha is the same as full enlightenment. So life is a gift, we should not waste it. There's another famous discourse by the Buddha. It starts with kicco manussapatilapo. It means the human life is very rare. So according to him, we can be reborn in many different places. The human life is not the highest, but it's the best, in the sense that you can experience the good and the bad. You can see the negative and the positive very easily. Also in the human life, you can create a lot of good karma. You can help others, you can do good things. And especially, it's the best place for meditation. It's the best place for developing your mind and actually free your mind from all attachments. So for you here, I traveled to quite a few countries, and I think Australia is one of the best countries in the world. Definitely better than Europe or America, I'm sure about that. So it's one of the best countries, and so you're either born here or you live in this country. Also, there's a lot of Buddhism available in Australia. You have the freedom to practice Buddhism, to practice your spirituality. So all the good opportunities are there. So you have to use now this good opportunity. So you have a lot of good karma to live in this country, to get the Buddhist teaching, to hear about meditation. So if you use all this good opportunity, if you make some effort, maybe this life is a very special one for you. So maybe in this life you can really make some progress and awaken your mind. So samsara, the Buddha called it the round of existence. So we are reborn again and again. Usually each time we are reborn, we get entangled in worldly activities, in education, job, marriage, family, enjoyments. Sooner or later we are getting old, we get sick, and we die. So we have repeated this cycle over and over again. But as I said, maybe this life is a golden opportunity. Maybe this one is a very special one. So the Buddhist teachings, also the Buddha is no longer around, but we still have his teachings, we still have the meditation systems, and this Vipassana meditation system, definitely it is working. There have been thousands of people who actually made some progress in this system. So if it's not working, then that means we are doing something wrong, or we do not put enough energy into it. So I hope that all of you will become the light. So I hope you will continue on your Dhamma path, especially continue with your meditation, and may you all reach stages of awakening. Sadhu, sadhu. There's a short verse which we usually recite at the end. It's like sharing the merit. Those who know can join in. Sabitiyo vivacchantu saparogo vinasatu mami pavatvantarayo sukidi gayuko bhava pavattu sappamangalam rakantu sappadevata sappa puttanupavena sada sotti bhavantu te apivadana silissa nicchang vatta bhajayino Chattaro dhamma vadanti ayuvanna sukhang balang Ayura rogya sambatti sakka sambatti mevacha Atto nipana sambatti imina de samichatu Sarasara So